in this industry, 99.9% of all people in the business are customer facing. They're either talking to them on the phone, they're meeting with them in the home. So how people think about an organization affects how they feel about an organization, which determines how they act when they're in the organization, which ultimately defines the success or the failure of a business.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. He's back. My friend Brian Gottlieb is back. And I am very excited because Brian's book is finally available. Beyond the Hammer, Brian Gottlieb.
And we have at least two copies of it.
At least two. Great, great book. I got, I was fortunate enough to get the very early versions of the book. How long did it take to get this whole thing together?
Oh gosh, almost 2 years.
Yeah,
it's been a journey.
It's a fantastic book. Everybody listening to this has got to go and get it. We are going to talk about what's in it. But there's stuff in this book that you could like literally take and build, start to build things into your business directly, like right out of the book. And I won't jump ahead here because I won't do it justice. But yeah, this is great. And it will be, by the time this gets released, it will be available on Amazon. Because as we're recording this, it's on pre-order, but it'll be ready. What was the date? Like the 11th?
September 10th is the official launch date.
All right. Yeah. So when you guys are listening to this, it is available. Go to Amazon. And by the way, when you do go to Amazon and you buy the book from there, make sure you leave a review for the book. And if it's not 5 stars, contact Brian directly. If you don't think it's worth 5 stars, contact Brian directly. And he'll probably buy the book back from you.
Great point. Great point.
So I just put that out there too. You know, it's, don't worry, you know, only about 7 or 8 people listen to this. So you'll only be out a few bucks. all right. So let's talk about why the book, and then tell us about it in your own words.
Sure. Why the book, right? Why did I decide to finally write a book? Look, we all know if you're a leader, a manager, a business owner, that you're trying to lead a business or a team and things aren't going as planned, we all know it's aggravating, it's frustrating, it's all of that. And misalignment plagues organizations, which really affects team performance. And there hasn't been an actionable book that's really about leadership for the home improvement business and the home services business that exists. And I wanted to create something that was, first of all, super approachable, secondly, super impactful, and thirdly, very actionable. So it has a lot of easy entry and exit points. It's specific to our industry. You know, you read it. And look, I'm really proud of it. And I think it's going to really make a huge impact for so many businesses, creating an aligned team, getting consistent results, you know, and dealing with getting past all the challenges that come within this industry.
Yeah. Well, this business is all about developing good people around you. You know, you and I have gone back and forth on the whole, you know, what business are we in? Are we in the sales and marketing business, or are we in the people development business? And I think that I'm going to stand by my position, which is I think that at the base level, you've got to understand sales and marketing, because this is a direct sales model. You know, we're going into people's homes, sitting at the kitchen table, doing presentation. It's not like retail. They're not coming to us. It's not a restaurant where we've got complete control over the entire environment. It's a direct sales model. But you're absolutely right that after a certain point, this becomes all about developing people, building teams, and getting all of those people kind of going in the same direction. And that's hard.
We can both agree, whether you're a training organization or a sales and marketing company, right? We can both agree that in this industry, 99.9% of all people in the business are customer facing. They're either talking to them on the phone, they're meeting with them in the home, they're setting a lead at a home show or, you know, at a fair or a festival. So how people think about an organization affects how they feel about an organization, which determines how they act when they're in the organization, which ultimately defines the success or the failure of a business. You know, when I started my company way back when in 2009 on a plastic folding table with $3,000 in cash, the business's success came down to how well I performed. That was it. It was based on me. But the moment you start hiring people, now the organization, the performance is based on how well the teams behave, you know, how the teams perform. And by the way, that's both when the leader is watching and in their absence. So getting an aligned team and getting everybody moving in the same direction and executing not just well, but executing well with consistency and making it really part of the DNA of the business is so important if you really want to grow a healthy organization.
Well, you can't do it without.
Right. You might have moments of success, but you're also going to have a lot of moments of challenges.
I like that. You have moments of success.
Yeah.
Temporary moments of success followed by lots of crap that you have to clean up and deal with. And then.
And in all fairness, you know, I was listening to one of your other podcasts that you did with our friend Vince Nardo. And we were talking about the pre-COVID and post-COVID world. Right. So I think a lot of post-COVID, everything was going like crazy, and we all thought we had great businesses. But now that things are kind of turning back to the way things used to be, we start to see the deficiencies in our business. Wow, it's a lot harder to make a lead. There are a lot of sales reps that have never sold in a post-COVID environment. So the business has changed, and we need to make sure that our teams are aligned around what it means to truly win in today's environment.
So the book starts off with a parable. And I just told Brian that years ago I tried to do this, and damn, it's hard to write a parable. It is not easy to write a parable, but it's a great story. You know, I had a question for you. I meant to ask you this the other day.
Sure.
How much of you is in both characters, Warren and Warren Construction and Marty?
Yeah, it's very much so. I've lived both sides of it. I've lived both sides of it. So there's a piece of me in both of them. How about that?
Yeah, I there's a few things in there that the first time I think I asked you about it. There was a few things on the Marty side that sounded like you.
Right.
But there was some stuff on the Warren side that also sounded like you. And so anyway, well, Warren is the company that starts with, and the main character's name again,
George Warren. George. Yeah, he's a contractor, right? His business, he's struggling. He's got burnt out employees, got dissatisfied customers, his margins are shrinking. You know, all the things that we deal with on a daily basis, right?
He's got the horrible customer that's pissed off and needs a solution and is giving him bad reviews. And his world sucks.
Yeah. And we've all been there, right? We've all had the customer that at some point they don't just want a discount. They practically want a free house, you know? So we've all had to deal with these types of customers. And so the first part of the book is written as a parable. It's a story about a struggling contractor who meets a mentor, and the contractor learns these five foundational pillars of leadership that transforms not just him, but also his team. The second half of the book shifts from storytelling to strategy. So it's with how to implement these five pillars into any business in the home improvement space, actionable ways to do it. And again, good stories on both sides. But anybody watching this will find it a fantastic read and an amazing, amazing audiobook version, by the way. Amazing.
I think I told you when you sent it to me and I received this FedEx package. And I'm looking through it. I couldn't stop. It was like I texted you afterwards. I said, damn, this is good. I couldn't put it down because it's easy. And that's why parables are so great. And it really kind of helps get the story told, but with feeling and with emotion. Which is not, by the way, as a writer, is not always easy to do. So, I keep calling him Warren. His name's George, but Warren Construction. He's in a world of hurt, and he meets Marty.
You meet Smarty,
who runs an amazing company.
Correct.
And the thing that's always, you know this as well as I do, I think, is that if we try and grow our businesses in a bubble all by ourselves, and I've done this before, by the way, I'm guilty of this.
Me too.
You're very limited by what you can do, the type of organization that you can run, because you're living inside of your own head.
Yeah.
But when you're open to the idea of being surrounded by, even if it's just one mentor or more, ideally more, I should say, boy, your whole world can really open up.
The right mentor for a business can make a huge difference, and look, even going to conferences like Accelerate Live, I mean, these all matter. You get to network with others and you always pick up, you pick up plenty of nuggets listening to people on stage, but at those lunch tables when you're sitting around with peers and you're hearing about how they're dealing with certain challenges, it's such an important part of the process. And what makes this industry so fantastic is that people, especially successful people, are happy to share.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I really love about it.
There's a certain satisfaction that comes from being a mentor and helping somebody. And I think another part of that is, Brian, I think that as entrepreneurs, we're lonely. And I've said this here before. I mean, we're to most people, coach that I know named Lee Miltier calls non-entrepreneurs civilians. So for civilians out there, the non-entrepreneurs, weird entrepreneurs are weird.
Yeah, that's right.
And there are very few people that we can actually talk to about our challenges, about our frustrations. People have their own crap to worry about. But when you're with another business owner, a certain, we have this thing in common. We have this struggle inside of ourselves that we have in common because we're wired to grow and do and be independent and strive for autonomy and be able to live the life. That's why we do what we do. And so anyway, I'm beating up the whole mentor thing, but I think if you want to, if you want to, you're the average of the five people you hang around the most. And so one of the easiest ways to up level your business and your life is to surround yourself with, five really great people.
Yeah. And I think what people will find when they read the book is that as George meets this mentor named Marty, the reader or the person that listens to the audiobook can really see Marty as their mentor as well.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Because his coaching is applicable to this industry and to the business owner and to the leader and to the manager inside of this business. So I think it's really, but you're right. There's a line that George says in the book where he says, pro tip, if you want to sleep through the night, don't own a remodeling company.
Right. Exactly.
I think we can all relate to that, right? Who's really, every owner out there has experienced sleepless nights. I know I certainly have. And you know what? The thing is, though, with the right tools, life doesn't have to be like that, and it's hard to do it by yourself. It's again, how do you get your team all aligned, moving in the same direction? And really, that's what the book is about.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to wrap up on the mentor part, to George's credit, he went and said, okay, I'm going to go drive however an hour, 2 hours away, and I'm going to go and I'm going to actually sit down with this guy and I'm going to be open to learning.
Correct.
So what does he start learning? So he learns about the five pillars.
Correct.
So why don't we talk about, why don't you introduce what the five pillars are? You go deep in the book on what they are and how to execute them, which is amazing.
That's right.
What are the five pillars?
Yeah. So the first pillar that George learns is the idea that, that belief is transferable, that when you believe in somebody inside of your organization, people have something known as FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And that prevents them from really going all in on anything. And especially, you bring on a new sales rep and they had a great interview and then they're like, not making it through training because they feel overwhelmed with all the scripting and such. Words of encouragement, positive belief goes a real long way for people, you know, especially when you're trying to build a team. But we also must know that negative belief is just as transferable as positive belief. So we want to make sure that we're sending out the right words of encouragement, and not just us as leaders, but also how do we get the whole team? How do we get everybody in the organization to not just believe in themselves, but also believe in each other? And when you do, it's transformational.
How do you do that? How do you do that when you're having a bad month like George was having?
Right. Because what happens is when we're having a bad month like George was having, he was having a bad several months in a row, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't just a 1 month. And you can get so stuck in the problems, right? But the problems don't get you anywhere. You have to say, what are we going to fix in this business? How do we move this thing forward? And again, because 99.9% of our team is customer facing, ultimately it's going to come down to the people. It's not something you're going to fix by yourself. It's going to come down to the people.
Well, but how hard is it? Because I know for me, when I was going through those really dark, hard times, it was hard for me to show up in a positive, as a positive leader. My belief was, oh crap, the whole bottom's going to fall out. I'm losing everything. You know, how do you stay up?
One of the pillars is belief is transferable. Another pillar, to your point, is that leaders are aware of the echo of their voice. And that's a really important pillar, because what tends to happen is, if your team sees you as stressed out or negative, or they're going to be afraid to bring anything to you. They're going to have us. People will determine what type of day they're going to have based on the type of the day that the CEO or the manager is having. And that's how they're going to respond. So we always have to be aware of the echo of our voice. And Brian, the echo isn't necessarily just in the words that we speak. Sometimes the echo is, well, we've got this high performer, low culture fit that's super disruptive in our business, but we don't do anything about it because we need their revenue. Or the low performer, high culture fit, the sales rep that we love, but they can't even close a car door. And as we tolerate these things, what it does is, you know, the culture of a business is shaped by the lowest level of acceptable behavior. And so we as leaders have to understand the impact of our echo. And sometimes the echo isn't necessarily the spoken word, but it's the action that's not being taken as well.
Can you say that culture part again?
Sure. The culture of a business is shaped by the lowest level of acceptable behavior. And again, I write about that in the book, and it's, you know, how do you, you know, what does that mean?
It's a powerful, powerful statement. What if you're the lowest level of acceptable behavior?
100%. And you know, what's interesting, what happens is in an organization is a lot of times, you know, we think we have a certain culture, and then some companies do something known as an exit interview, right? An employee leaves, they're walking out the door. So you ask them a bunch of questions. And, you know, at that point, it's really an autopsy. They've quit. They're leaving the business, right? And now we find out all the things that we did wrong. You know, what the mindset of shifting from an exit interview into a stay interview, instead of waiting for people to leave to find out what's wrong, a great way to measure your culture is by simply conducting a 4-question stay interview. 4 questions would be, number one, what makes you want to come to work every day? Number two, what would one day make you want to leave? Question number three is, what is one thing the company is doing wrong today? And question four is, what is something you're not getting out of your manager that you really need? That's going to tell you a whole lot about your culture and the mindset of your team. And, you know, I keep going back to culture and mindset, because here's why that matters. Well, the reason it matters so significantly is that how people think affects how they feel. How they feel determines how they act. This affects attendance, retention, quality, safety, and productivity. All of those things determine how well an employee is engaged in the business. And whether it's an employee or a subcontractor, by the way, it's the same thing. And how engagement is defines organizational performance. It starts by developing the right mindset. How do you get the mindset of your team correct? And that's because culture is how people think and feel about a business. So knowing your culture is important.
How do you get yours correct first as the leader?
Well, I think, first of all, leaders simply don't have bad days. That's like rule number one. If you're a leader, you don't get to have a bad day in front of your team. Now, you can always call me. My cell phone's always on. Give me a call. I know you can call you, Brian, anytime.
Me too. Yep.
Call me, complain all you want. But in front of your team, you don't get to have bad days. You have to, because you're going to hit rough waters. And if the captain of the ship is panicking and you're hitting rough waters, everybody's going to be jumping overboard. So let's not do that.
Well, and I think that's really powerful advice, because the pillars are they start with belief is transferable. I think you did that on purpose, because the way that you lay them out makes sense sequentially. And so if you don't believe in yourself and you don't believe what you are doing, how are you then going to be able to transfer that, or quote unquote, sell it to everybody else?
And it's such an important step. You know, the pillar that follows belief is transferable is leaders shape culture through purpose and direction. And, you know, there was a study that I wrote about that upwards of 60% of people have quit a job simply to get rid to get away from a manager.
Manager,
you know,
yeah.
And when we talk about that in pillar five, it also does reflect to purpose and direction. Look, I truly believe there are a lot of folks in a business that don't understand how their role contributes to the greater purpose of a business. And businesses tend to get very siloed as well, where production doesn't like sales and sales doesn't like the call center and the call center and nobody likes accounting. And we tend to get a very siloed business, and that creates conflict. It also creates a very inconsistent customer experience because you have competing priorities. So getting alignment around purpose and direction is super important for an organization.
Yeah.
It's a foundation.
Well, and you are, so you and I are involved in a business together. And the other day we had
a great business together, by the way.
Yeah. And we had a meeting and you came to us with, you were working on the vision and the purpose. And I think we were all kind of blown away. I mean, you're very, very good at developing a vision, a mission, a purpose for the business. You know, next week we have our profit workshop. So we're going to be talking about profit. But profit and making money is not a good purpose necessarily for a business.
It's a metric.
Yeah. So when we talk about vision and purpose,
yeah,
how do we come up with that? How do you develop that? Where does that come from?
Yeah. So look, I think it starts with, you know, why do we exist? What is our purpose as an organization? Why are we doing this, right? At the different businesses that I've owned over the course of the years, our mission statement, as most people know, is do well and do good, which means to make a decent profit decently. Now, that's a mighty broad topic, right? What does it mean to make a decent profit? And what does it mean to make it decently, right? What does it mean to do well? What does it mean to do good? But I think any organization, you know, the more you can define what is your purpose, but then really to get people aligned, they need to know where the business is going. Where is the organization going? What does it aspire to become? And how does it win? Now, I've helped a lot of people write their vision statement, and I'll share with you it's a super easy process, and it's a fun exercise when you involve your team in it, because you shouldn't do it alone. You get a bunch of people in a room sitting around a table, and you talk about, like, where are we going? What do we aspire to become as an organization? But secondly, start making a list of where do we screw up? When do we lose? How do we lose? Well, we lose when we don't take great care of our customers. We lose when we're not good communicators. All of these things. Come up with the ways that you lose. The opposite is how you win. So you can create an aspirational new chart, a new course for your team on this is what we aspire to become, and this is how we win, by simply doing the things that don't make us lose. And
yeah.
But then everybody understands their place, and it definitely really contributes towards alignment.
Yeah. In one of my businesses years and years ago, 20 something years ago, I basically made a list of what are all of the things that a customer hates about working with the trade that we were in.
Yeah.
And we came up with that list, and then we looked at that list and we said, okay, now how are we going to overcome every single one of those things? And that we didn't really have a vision necessarily. I didn't know about all of this stuff back then, but can you give us a couple examples of what that sounds like?
Well, I'll give you an example of what our vision statement was
from
during
yours.
The businesses that I owned and operated. Our vision statement was, we aspired to become a world-class organization committed to improving homes, lives, and communities, okay? We win by being excellent at recruiting, by being a training organization, by being excellent communicators, and only choosing products that added value to our customers and our company. You see, I had made the mistake in business in the past, in the early days, years of business, is I would sell stuff, but I didn't make any money at it. The customers loved it, but I didn't make any money at it. And so I had to eliminate certain products in my business. So that's why that was plugged into the vision statement. I want to install products that add value to our customers and our company,
and
not
our
just
company,
our customers, because so it does add clarity on decision-making as well.
This episode is brought to you by Rilla. Rilla is the leading virtual ride-along software for the home improvement industry. That means when your team goes out and talks to homeowners in the home, they record their conversations with the Rilla mobile app. They use AI to automatically transcribe, analyze, and give them feedback to improve their close rates and help your sales manager save dozens of hours every month. If you want to have your sales manager with your rep on every single appointment, go to Rilla.com and book a demo. That's RILLA.com. Yeah. No, that's really good. And it's got to be about more than just making money. And again, like you said, money is your scorecard, is telling you if you did it right.
That's right. Well, and also, you know, there's a saying that, you know, chaos produces revenue, but discipline produces profits.
Ooh, I like that. That's good.
Yeah. And so kind of getting your team aligned around what are the disciplines of the business? What are the disciplines? You know, it's, again, in the first year or two in business, it was just sell anything, right? Just sell anything. If you can sell it, sell it. But over time, you realize, you know what? Not everybody is your customer. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Not everybody is your customer. Sell things that you can make money at and walk away from things that you can't.
Sorry, I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
Chaos creates revenue. Discipline creates
profits.
That's right. Don't worry. When I steal it, I will give you attribution for that. That's good. I'm going to use it. So I'm probably going to use it next week at the Profit Workshop. You know what Brian Gottlieb says? He says this. This episode is brought to you by Rilla. Rilla is the leading virtual ride-along software for the home improvement industry. That means when your team goes out and talks to homeowners in the home, they record their conversations with the Rilla mobile app. They use AI to automatically transcribe, analyze, and give them feedback to improve their close rates and help your sales manager save dozens of hours every month. If you want to have your sales manager with your rep on every single appointment, go to Rilla.com and book a demo. That's RILLA.com.
To anybody watching this, if you're not part of Profit Masters, you need to be, because it really does help your business. Hey, by the way, can we back up to the parable? Because I want to tell you a story about it.
Yes, please.
Okay, there's the hard copy book. Mm-hmm. There's a Kindle version, but there's also an audio book. And I love audiobooks, okay? But can I just be braggadocious for a second, Brian? I wanted to create not
you
just an audio book. I wanted to create a world-class audiobook, world-class. And I really think I did, okay? And part of what allowed that to happen is, the content is great and it's applicable. And I think a lot of people have done an early read, a lot of people that are well-known in this industry, and the feedback's been fantastic on it, really terrific. Like yours, Brian, thank you. But the audio version, yes, I wanted to read it, but trying to read a parable is hard because you have different characters, and you know, there are many different characters in this parable, and they have different personalities and character arcs. And I thought, I'll read the second half, the strategy side, but I wanted to work with somebody that was really excellent at reading parables. My favorite narrator of all time is somebody named Eduardo Ballerini. This person, in fact, he's known as the voice of God. And he used to be an actor on The Sopranos, by the way. He's really famous. He's world famous. But he does a lot of James Patterson books and all these other big authors. So I thought, how do I get him to read my parable? I mean, I don't know. How do I get him to read it? So I actually Googled him. I reached out to Eduardo Ballerini and I said, hey, would you read my parable? And he agreed to it. So actually, Eduardo Ballerini is the voice of the parable. And what he does for this parable is He brings this thing to life in a way that is that simply doesn't exist in the home improvement industry. It's a really amazing, amazing experience. I highly recommend it. And then, of course, I read the second half, and I think I do okay with it.
Okay, hold on a minute.
I'm holding.
Damn it. All right, everybody, just hold on a second, because I am trying to find an audio sample from this guy.
He's got a million things out there. He's really, really good. Yeah,
I'm at his website, but it's, where's the, oh yeah.
Hundreds of famous audiobooks for famous writers.
Yeah. Hold on.
I am not a famous writer. I didn't even think he'd return my email, but anyway. But you know, Brian, the thing is, you never know unless if you ask, right?
Of course.
When we set a Guinness World Record for our Windows for a Cause program that we ran at one of our window companies, you know, I didn't know how to set a Guinness World Record, so I cold called Guinness to see if they would create a category for this, and they did. Yeah, I think as you know, you never know unless if you make a phone call. So Eduardo is an example of that.
Oh my God, what an amazing voice. Yeah.
You'll love it. I promise you. Commitment from Brian Gottlieb. You will love the audio version of this book.
Cool.
Okay?
Cool.
There we go.
And that, I would imagine, that's going to be on Kindle at Amazon when the book releases.
Correct. The book will be available because Forbes is actually my publisher. So it'll be available in Amazon. It'll also be available at Barnes & Noble. It'll be available in airports, those little tables in airports for a few months. So yeah. And if you'll buy a book, it's going to be available all over the place.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I'm buying. So to all of our Success Society members that are listening, we either have or we're in the process of getting all of you a copy of it. And we'll be sending you a copy of the book.
We should talk about pillar number four, that leaders model their business. What's that?
Go ahead. I was at pillar five.
Oh, we can talk about pillar five.
No, go with four.
Sure, and then
we can talk about pillar five. I have a couple things that are really good in pillar five that I really like.
That's good.
Talk about four.
Sure. Four is leaders model their business as a training organization. You know, Brian, as long as I have been in this, you know what? Can I tell you something? I'll tell you a secret. Okay. I'll tell all your listeners a secret right now, all your viewers a secret. Shh. There's a labor shortage. And guess what's going to happen next year? There's going to be a labor shortage. As long as I've been in this business, there's been a labor shortage. Okay. Yeah. So, you know,
I can't find good people.
Right. I can't find good people. Yeah. I can't get people. So how do you, instead of relying on trying to find talent out there, how do you develop your own? How do you, you know, if you really want to be a training organization, how do you start with that process? What does it mean to be a training organization? You know, we know you have to document stuff, but where do you start with your documentation? Right. And to me, by the way, and I get into this in the back of the book quite a bit, that if you think about the entire customer journey, right, from the time you generate a lead to the time you get paid and you're done, you look for where are there friction points, and friction points in a project happen. The potential for friction happens anytime an employee is interacting or a subcontractor is interacting with the homeowner, or anytime an employee in one department is working with another department. These are opportunities for friction. This is the first part that you want to start your documentation. Start with friction points and write down. When I started with my Tundraland business documenting processes, some of them only were two sentences on a piece of paper. You know, you can't let perfection stand in the way of progress. Just get something down. You can always add to it. But part of being a training organization is that if you're not, then you have to run your business through policies and through micromanaging, and you know, and that isn't a place that anybody really wants to work for. So being a training organization will change your world.
Talk a little bit more about that, because when you say to be a training organization, one of the things you talk about in the book is working with people's own personal goals.
Correct.
So the idea is that we're not only developing you to be a robot for the business, we want to develop you so that you are living your version of your best life.
If you want to build a business, you have to commit to building people. Now, that doesn't mean just people at their task in the work environment. How do you help them achieve their bigger goal in life? You know, I've got a friend of mine that has a business out in Arizona, and he has a call center. And when you walk through his call center, it's the coolest thing. I've seen a lot of cool call centers. It was cool. The call center agents have vision boards all around the call center, and it's their financial goals, their business goals, their home goals. And so every time they're making a phone call, they're connecting the call to what it is they're really trying to accomplish. And when we can connect people to something beyond the KPIs of the business, that they what are the KPIs for? Look, the KPIs are for me, but by them accomplishing the KPIs, it's for them because it helps them accomplish a much greater goal. And,
yeah.
And taking the time and really connecting with people is really important. And teaching your managers how to do that is a game changer for a business.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people struggle with, so I was just on the phone with a client a couple of days ago. Their business is going to do, I don't know, somewhere between 6 and 8 million this year. They're profitable. The challenge is it's all falling on him and his partner.
Yeah.
And they keep trying to build a team.
Yeah.
And he's gone through a few sales managers. The last one was a good one, but he lost him to a big competitor. And then he hired, and so now, again, they are without a sales manager, so now it's him doing it.
Yeah.
They hired a marketing manager. That didn't work. And so now they're starting that process over again. So aside from the fact that it's annoying as shit and it's expensive,
yeah,
it's so frustrating.
It's disruptive to the business, too.
Yeah, it's like, how can you get anything accomplished? Because you're trying to take a few steps forward, but then, boom, you get the rug pulled out, and now you're behind where you were when you started.
But let's talk about that, because now that ties into our fifth pillar, is that managers need a checklist. Look,
yeah.
We train call center agents. We train sales representatives forever before we let them talk to a customer. We don't just say, congratulations, welcome to my company, go talk to a customer. But managers get tossed into the mix without any real training on what it means to be an effective and high-performing manager.
High-performing being a
high-performing manager.
Yeah.
What are the 10 practices to being a high-performing manager? This book, I've dedicated a lot of this book to each and every one of those practices that go into being a high-performing manager, so you can take this book and you can truly, you now have a training guide for your managers. And when you make better managers, because, you know, if we back up, I bet if we really peek behind the curtain of that sales manager that left for a bigger company, there was probably something else going on too that made him want to leave. Because people don't just start a job and change a job because somebody across the street is paying a dollar more. Maybe there's some micromanagement, maybe there's some lack of empowerment. Who knows what it is? But there's probably something else.
Yes, I agree with you. And I shouldn't say I agree with you. I'll say you are exactly right, because there are other issues there. But people have, and I know this just from my own experience, it's hard to make that switch from, Dan Sullivan calls it rugged individualist. I think he got it from somewhere, but
yeah.
The rugged individualist, yeah. That I can do everything in this business. I'm going to go sell. I'm going to manage the crowd. I'm going to do this. And go from that to now being a team builder. How do you make that? How does that transition happen in a way that's not so painful?
Did I ever tell you about my epiphany?
Maybe. Tell me again.
Brian, I had an epiphany. I literally had this, oh, epiphany. I remember that it was the first, I even know when it was. It was the first weekend of August, and it was sitting on the front porch drinking a glass of wine with my wife in Appleton, Wisconsin. And I know it was the first weekend in August because a music festival just happened called Mile of Music, and we were one of the sponsors of it. And I was saying to her, gosh, you know, when the community, and it was such a good community vibe. I said, you know, when the community is doing great, we just feel better. We're in a better place. And the same is true when the business is doing great. When the business is doing great, I sleep at night. I'm just a better human being, I think, at home and all of that. And so we're in a better place. And my epiphany was that the reality is I can't reach my full potential until the people inside of my business first realize theirs. For the business to be at its full potential, the people have to be at their full potential. My epiphany was that my path to my full potential traveled through the people on my team, which meant my sole purpose as the leader of the organization is helping others realize their potential. That was my role. I didn't truly understand what my role was. I mean, I'm leading a company, I'm doing this, I'm here driving business. That was my role. And once I realized that, that's when I was really able to say, okay, how do I just be the best at that? What do I need to become?
Yeah.
Just my epiphany.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it was.
How far along in the business were you when you had that epiphany?
I wish I would have had a lot sooner. Let me just say that. It was probably 2015-ish when I had that epiphany. Yeah.
So you had been in already for 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years in the business. And
how big was the business at that point?
You know, probably $30-ish million plus or minus. You know, we were, you know, when I sold all the businesses, the family businesses, we were doing 150 million.
Yeah.
So at 30 million. But look, I was in many ways, I was the bottleneck. It was, you know, and that's just not a sustainable course. It's not even a great work experience for people.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's probably why this person left for a better opportunity, because probably not a great work environment.
Yeah. And then, you know, when you think about, well, we brought in this marketing manager and they didn't work either. Like you were saying with that story, it's, you know, I would question, you know, how are we interviewing people? Right. And we do get into some interviewing in the book on how to hire people and hiring to ether and some of those sort of things. There's a lot of good nuggets in this book that, again, are very actionable. But yeah, I mean, are we hiring people for the right reason? You know, when we talk about inspecting culture, you know, yes, you can inspect culture through doing a stay interview like we talked about. But when you look at any organization, how do they hire? How do they fire? How do they promote? How do they compensate? And how do they terminate? You know, how do they fire? You know, how do they reward? What do they reward on? Do they reward just on, like, at a company meeting? Is it the number one sales rep? Or is it like the mentor of the year or the difference maker of the year? Are there rewards being given beyond the metrics of the business? How a company hires, fires, promotes, compensates, and rewards can tell you a lot about the culture of the organization.
How do I do all of this when it's me and five other people?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, look, at some point you have to do really two things. Number one is you have to, as soon as possible, hire to your weaknesses as soon as you can, because your weaknesses really burn you out in this business. But then very quickly, my opinion is you want to replicate your strengths, because that's an easy position to onboard. And then that allows you to focus on some other things and really throw fuel on that. But I think ultimately what happens for most business owners is they know that they need to hire somebody, but they don't necessarily know that they can afford this person. The challenge that the organization has, the core issue of the organization is it doesn't trust its ability to forecast. It doesn't trust its ability to forecast numbers and hit forecasted targets. Because when you're not confident you can hit a forecasted target, of course you're going to be afraid to hire people. The core issue, the not being afraid to hire somebody is a symptom. It's not a problem. It's a symptom. The core problem is the inability to hit forecasted targets. To me, every business owner should practice that first, get really good at that. And even if they're conservative targets, hit your targets, and then you have confidence in hiring people.
It's so interesting that you say that. And again, you're right. And there's so many people that are just flying by the seat of their pants. They have no idea what kind of revenue they're going to do next month.
Right. Right.
They have a dream. They have a hope. But there aren't metrics in place. There aren't KPIs. There isn't accountability in place to get them there. And wow, that's big. So how do you, again, it's me and five people. So how do I set that up? What does that look like?
I'll share with you when you say, you know, what was the secret sauce to growing a big business? You know, if I were to really, because, you know, I've had 2 years to think about this, because sometimes when you're in the mix and doing it, it's like, it's just going. But as I really reflect back, the secret sauce of the business was to go from just me on a plastic folding table to 600 employees when I eventually sold all the businesses, is you have to hire a lot of people and you have to grow quickly. But we were excellent at hitting forecasted numbers. So we were excellent at, number one, creating targets and then achieving those targets. In the beginning, we didn't always hit them, but we learned along the process. But it wasn't me in a silo trying to come up with the targets and hit them. It was involving the whole team. But what happens as a business owner is, as you gain confidence in being able to hit a forecasted target, your willingness to invest in the business with people and resources also increases.
Yeah.
They work hand in hand. The less confident you are in hitting numbers or forecasted targets, the less willing you are to invest in your business. The more confident you are, the more willing you are to invest in the business. So it's just good for the organization. But, you know, I remember in the early days of trying to hit targets, I used to have our production team try to come up with, okay, what is our revenue target, our install revenue for the next, you know, whatever, for the next 12 months, let's look at it every month. And in the beginning, boy, we'd be way off. And I wouldn't beat them up for it. It would be like, okay, what did we learn? You know, what are the reasons we missed target? What are we doing about it? And when are we going to be back on target? Let's teach our team how to hit targets. Let's just be really, if we do nothing else, let's be excellent at that. Now, to be excellent at that, yes, you need a strong culture. Yes, you need documented systems. Yes, you need consistency. But, you know, it's interesting. It's a whole book by itself, by the way.
Yeah. Is that the next one?
Maybe.
Well, we can go five different places with that one. I'm looking at the clock here and I'm trying to think of where, you know, which one of the five do we hit? Well, you are the king of culture. You created a hell of a culture in your companies. And it's, you know, it's, here's the playbook. I mean, really, this is the playbook. And oh, by the way, I wanted to mention this to everybody. You know, Brian and I are both selling the book really hard. But let us tell you a little secret about books. Brian, see that banjo that's behind him? If everybody listening to this goes and buys a copy of this book, he might maybe be able to buy some new strings for that banjo.
That's right.
I think he probably makes like $2 or $3 a book.
Yeah, so the P&L on a book is terrible.
Yeah, I'm not making money on the book. In fact, I'm being a consumer of the book. It's just, I believe in the message so much.
And, thank you.
You know, books are, it's kind of like getting a mentor. You know, if somebody doesn't have access to somebody like you, boy, oh boy, you go read your book. And here's the best of Brian Gottlieb inside of 200 pages for whatever the book costs.
Yeah, and the book, by the way, the book isn't about me. You know, it's, I didn't make it self-serving, braggado. It's not about me. It's about, it was designed to help you, the business owner, the manager, the leader, you know, get your arms around your business and build great teams and to be the best leader you can be. That's really the purpose of the book. And, you know, and I think you'll enjoy it and find it helpful.
Look, if you don't have the answers yourself and you can't quote unquote afford to go out and hire people and, you know, to get the knowledge, boy, go start reading. Spend some of your time as a leader reading from what other people did, what they learned along the way.
Right.
Take their lessons and apply them to your life and into your business. And I think that's what's so powerful about these books. For 20 some bucks, the value that you're going to get out of it is exponential.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, again, like I think you'll find it is a lot of easy entry and exit points. You know, when I first started writing it, I started writing it like a leadership book. And I was like, you know, I just didn't want it to be just another leadership book out there. I wanted it to be something that was like, I can totally freaking relate to this as a reader. Oh my gosh, I've been George before. I'm George right now. And this is exactly what I'm dealing with. And oh, this is how I get out of this. And I understand now. And just make it really actionable so that it's not this theoretical thing that I got to figure out how I'm going to apply it to my business. This is super applicable to your business. So I think you'll really truly enjoy it.
Well, let's close out here because there is a lot of mindset in the book and you and I have had this conversation before and your wife, Kathy, is just, she's amazing with all of that law of attraction,
and
the journals and all of that stuff. If you guys are interested, we did a podcast, me and Addie, with Brian and his lovely wife, Kathy.
It was so fun.
Yeah, back around Valentine's Day. So if you go back to February of this year, we talked a lot about the importance of mindset.
Yeah.
And one of the things about you that I know is you do not think small. You do not think small. You think big. You're not afraid to think big. And I think a lot of people are afraid to think big because they get caught up in, well, how am I going to do it? How is that even possible for me? And when you, in the book, you talk about having a learning mindset.
Right. Correct.
And one of the ways to think bigger is to become a student, to learn. In fact, I completely forgot about all of this until the very end of the book. I completely forgot that you went to Harvard.
Yeah. Harvard
you
Business School.
And,
yeah.
Larry Kloss.
That's right.
And
I was in my 50s when I did it because I didn't, I went straight from high school, which I barely graduated, yeah, right into working. And I, you know, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So you've always been a lifelong learner, but here you've got in this book about a learning mindset.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the organization, you want this in your organization. And so you've got here three things: incentivize personal development. You've got exercise the learning muscle and encourage managers to see the business through the lens of the customer.
Correct.
And so it's interesting. Do you want to talk anything there to add about learning mindset and the importance of that in your organization, how important it was in your organization?
We hit the market correct. You know, we were growing a large business when, you know, back in the days, not a lot of companies were growing. Now it seems to be a little more common, especially with a lot of the consolidation, yeah, that's going on. So we were able to open up in new markets. We were able to simplify our products, but all of that would have been missed if we didn't have a learning mindset, you know, to say, what's really going on in the industry? What is the market telling us? What does the customer really want? And I'll share with you, as a business grows, what happens is the leader of the business, as you start to get more and more sales reps and more, you know, and you're not running appointments anymore. Now you got somebody else running appointments for you and you're not doing installs. Somebody else is doing installs. And what's happening is you're getting further and further and further away from the customer. Mm-hmm. And a shepherd should smell like the sheep. Okay. And if you're going to be the shepherd of the organization, you have to figure out a way, how do you smell like the sheep? And the way to do that, because you have to constantly learn, you have to have your ear to the customer. So you want to give the people closest to the customer, not just a voice, but a megaphone, because otherwise you can make decisions in a silo. And look, in all fairness, I've seen some very, very large organizations. You probably have some in your market where they make decisions that are so far removed from what the customer really needs. It's like, what are we doing here? So you want to have a learning mindset, but you want to have the right learning mindset by making sure the people closest to the customer have a megaphone,
yeah,
and are always heard.
Yeah. Love it. Love, yeah, it. Well, Brian, this was awesome. Good luck with the book. And again, everybody, just go to Amazon, Brian Gottlieb, GOTTLIEB, Beyond the Hammer. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. And Brian is also, if you don't mind me doing a shameless plug, Accelerate Live. Tickets will be going on sale very soon. I think the first week of October. We have a killer event planned. We're going to be in Amelia Island. In or on, when you say an island, are you supposed to say you were going to be on an island or in the island?
Well, I think you're on the island, but we'll be in it together. How about that?
Yes, we'll be in it together at an amazing resort. Brian will be one of our speakers. He's been kind enough to agree to that. And if you've never met him, if you have never experienced him live, you got a little tiny taste of it here, but he has no shortage of energy, no shortage of energy. And the information that comes out is gold, 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 gold. So looking forward to that. And I appreciate you, my friend. Good luck with the book.
Brian, thank you for your friendship, for all you do for this industry. You make such a big difference in so many people's lives. For the events you put on, they're best in class, and for helping me promote this book, not for the money, but for the impact. It's for the impact. So thank you. I appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome. My pleasure. My pleasure. All right, everybody. So until next time, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode.
See you next time.